Okay, are you ready, Orson?
Yes, always.
Okay, Gamer Fuel Mana Potion Extreme. Commercial, take one.
I don't comprehend the provenance of this beverage. It purports a delivery of unbridled energy, but by all appearances is little more than window washer serum stuffed with tablets of bromide.
Orson, okay, if we could just record from the mark one time, please.
Very well.
Gamer Fuel, Mana Potion Extreme commercial, take two.
We know of a little map where every July a Mr. Mordekaiser collects fresh blue blast fruit from his jungle, and do you really mean that?
I'm sorry, Orson, can we take that again? It's each July, please.
Each July?
Yes, please, if we could just do each July.
Very well. We know of a little map where every July a Mr. Mordekaiser collects fresh blue blast fruit, whatever the devil that is, from his jungle. And I won't. This is intolerable.
What?
It's every July. There's no known way in the English language to say each July. It's impossible. And what's this business with a Mr. Mordekaiser?
I'm sorry. It's the line, Orson.
Mordekaiser has no business in a jungle. It's ridiculous on the face of it. Mordekaiser belongs in Top Lane, getting fed. It's unthinkable. Impossible. I won't.
I'm sorry, Orson.
It's foolishness and deviltry. This is wearying. I've never been so aggravated. You find me one top 10 running Mordekaiser in a jungle, and I'll blow you.
All right. Sorry.
It's just stupid. Mordekaiser in a jungle. It's foolish. Meaningless. Impossible.
Let's try a different scene. Can we get the Warcraft stuff up?
We know of a little raid in Molten Core, where a young priest harvests fire cherry bombs every day to make... Oh, this is intolerable nonsense.
What's wrong, Orson?
Aside from cherry bombs being an explosive and not a fruit?
Yes, aside from that?
Nobody runs Molten Core, and certainly not to harvest fruit. Also, this everyday bit is nonsense. They reset on a weekly basis, so this harvesting is simply unsustainable. How can I lend my name to this?
We just need it to evoke the game.
Well, I think there's too much directing going on.
Let's just move on. What's the next flavor?
Minecraft Melon.
And go.
We know a little pixelated field where melon it...
Dare I ask?
You know they have interesting fruit in Minecraft? Can you not see what I'm up against? It could be chorus fruit. Chorus fruit, isn't that more interesting?
Yes, Orson, chorus fruit is very interesting.
I'm so weary of all of this. It's tiresome, really. No more for today. I quit. I take my leave of this. I'm going to head across to my next gig. A truly promising new restaurant. Good day. I'm here at the South Attleboro Cheese Dudes. Almost every night here, there's a cheese fight in the parking lot, and one of the popular entrees to load up on is Cheese Dude's famous Cheeser's Palace of Cheese and Things to be found in cheese. It's thick and oily and molten. I truly recommend it. Cheese Dudes. Cheese Dudes will sell no cheese before it's melty.
Welcome back. This is Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week, John and I get together and discuss topics of interest to us and maybe others.
Maybe.
You never know.
It's possible.
Yeah. How are you this week, John?
I am finally not dying.
You're still doing a bunch of like nose-clearing nonsense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still a little sniffly and a little coughy, but man... It's been like 2 weeks, and it's terrible.
You straight up had like the plague. I'm amazed you made it through. I was already kind of interviewing for replacement Johns.
You and your love of getting Johns.
I just needed more John. I can't do this without a John.
Yeah.
I can't do anything without a John. I can't finish without a John.
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to say.
This podcast. You cannot finish this podcast without a John.
What I'm trying to do here is a prostitution joke.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is you like Johns.
So, John, what did we read last week?
Why, it was The Secret of Xeron.
Yeah, that's right, The Secret of Xeron. It was a game, it was kind of pulpy.
It was a game.
It was kind of pulpy, it kind of had
It was like my favorite kind of orange juice. That's not true. It's like my least favorite kind of orange juice.
You don't like pulp in your orange juice?
Why would I want little bits of stuff in my orange juice?
I'm sorry. I forgot the simple rule to understanding how you like food. You don't because you're weird and dumb.
How I like food. I don't want stuff in my stuff.
It's okay. Here's the thing. You're right.
I'm like a baby.
You are. You like single consistency foods. You like a nice smooth texture. Like you don't like chunky peanut butter. You won't even eat that.
What I want is some from the box mashed potatoes.
Like with milk and water and stuff in them, or
Yeah.
Or just dry powder?
Yeah, just straight from the box powder.
Just rub that on your gums?
That's the good stuff. I just snort lines of that.
All right. We reviewed Secret of Xeron last week. It was a mid-2000s role-playing game set in a kind of original fantasy world with a lot of pulp and magic and technological elements built into it.
Yep.
And we got a lot of comments from people on this one. We had a lot of questions that were very specific to the game. Normally, people tend to, when confronted with these game reviews, they tend to respond by asking us, like, you know, what our favorite professional wrestler is. Yeah. So it was nice to get a lot of feedback that directly related to the game. And
it's The Rock.
It's The Rock.
It's always The Rock.
Kamala the Uganda Giant. I'm sorry, I'm just from a certain age. I'm just of a certain age.
You are.
That's
what it is. A gentleman of a certain age prefers Ugandan Giants.
I liked the wrestling when it wasn't all just kind of like Midwestern and Southern looking white dudes just with regular names.
Well, that's what it is now.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's all like, I'm Chris Jericho, I'm Johnny Hard Slab, and that's like all you get. But back in my day, it was like colorful, hilarious racism.
Yeah, you got like Doink the Clown.
Yeah, Doink the Clown, and the Gobbly Gooker. So anyway, we figured that we probably weren't qualified to really get in and answer all these questions about what happened in Legend of Xeron, and you know, one of them straight up, what is the secret of Xeron? So you know what we decided to do is just reach out and get the author and invite him on the show, and indeed we did. So, folks, let me go ahead and introduce you to the author of The Secret of Xeron, Chris Hockabout. Chris, how are you?
Great, thanks. Great for having me on here. I'm really excited.
Oh, man, it's a real pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
It's not that common that the two of us actually come out liking a game.
Yeah, are you kidding me? I was kind of floored.
Well, this is something that was a surprise to us, is that you actually were already a listener. That's another rarity.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a product of the gaming culture of the 80s when I came up into it. And as I got older, I was really curious about, like, you know, those old games like Jeroen. Jeroen was actually what drew me to your podcast. I was like, God, has anyone ever played that game? Because I bought it a long time ago, because I thought the art was amazing. But of course, like you, discovered the system was
kind of confusing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that one came to us through a family connection. We did that like third or fourth episode. And the reason we did is because I had the book, because it was a gift from the author of Skyrealms of Jeroen to my girlfriend's sister. And so it's even signed to my girlfriend's sister and everything in that copy. It was just a surprise that we knew the author off, well, we knew people who knew people who knew the author.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we were 6 degrees.
Right. Yeah.
As it always the case, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. On Twitter, someone recently established that we are within 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon now.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Anyway, Chris, you wrote Secret of Xeron, and I'm going to call it Legend of Xeron every single time forever. I don't know why. I like the title.
That's okay. You know, it's kind of a legend, and it's, you know, in a way, this RPG of ours. But what was your question?
I was going to say, you're the author. Tell us all about it. Tell us what the game is. I mean, we've been describing it, but...
So, you know, the game was kind of came out of what probably a lot of game designers do is if the game that you want to play isn't out there, make it yourself. And I kind of got turned off from fantasy of this idea of you know, there was a castle, or there was a kingdom and a wizard and a dragon, and this thing happened, and then 5,000 years later, there's a kingdom and a wizard and a dragon. And I was like, 5,000 years and nothing changed? So I was like, well, like, you know, what if I took a typical fantasy world and just kind of like moved the clock forward to its post-industrial period? You know, what would that look like?
Oh, I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and then kind of mixing in a lot of things I was just really influenced at the time. I was reading a lot of Miyazaki, and I was so enchanted by the Noshka manga, and wanted to run a game in it. And at the same time, I got this job to run a Dungeons & Dragons summer school class for the Berkeley Jewish Community Center.
Wow,
in 1992. and I had to come up with a world for the kids to play in, and so that was sort of the genesis of that.
All right. So did you run this game for a Jewish community center summer school?
And then, like a lot of games, D&D? it was a homebrew system. Yeah, but I used BRP. I used the basic role-playing system
awesome.
At the time. For it.
So,
yeah.
As you probably noticed, we liked a lot of things about your game. We liked the inventiveness. Notably, I was a big fan of the martial arts system, which unfortunately I only took like a second to say this game has a cool one and left it at that. But before we get into the stuff we loved, there was one thing that I really want the story of, which was what happened with the layout. Because I've never said like, oh, this game would be amazing if not for the printing, and this was weird. So please tell us what happened.
So like I said in my IM to you, it's an object lesson, and don't play with your text.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't try to be clever and inventive unless you're like a master printmaker, and you're hand making that book.
Mm-hmm.
Just black text on white paper and leave it at that, and don't fuck with it. And and we had this whole concept of secrets, and all that text was mm-hmm. actually a key for that we sold in our Game Master screen, where you could decode all that text, and it all has sort of like secret messages about events going on in the world and weird stuff going on. And,
wow.
And like the whole concept was like, and in the Game Master's Guide, which was basically all the stuff left over when White Wolf said, no, we're not printing a 320-page book for you, sorry. So we had all this stuff left over. We had to put in a separate book. And it went into depth about secrets, and that we left a lot of open questions in the kind of like in the history and the timeline,
mm-hmm.
which we set up to be the questions that the Game Master would answer for themselves and come up with their own answers to them. And we kind of guide them through that process and how that would influence the creation of their Zoran campaign.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So effectively, if you were to do a future draft, which I'm sure you are, and you're going to tell us all about, you'd probably skip the silver foil.
No, we're not doing that again. No, not at all.
All I can think of when I think of there's a secret text with all of the words in there is that all of them are just like dirty limericks or Burma Shave commercials.
Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Drink your Ovaltine. Yeah, no, but when we got the galley proofs for it, it looked as bad as it does in the place of the book, and I flipped out. But it's a galley proof, you know. It's just a grayscale image, and they assured us, no, it'll be 10% silver opacity ink. You know, it'll be just what you want. And no, they screwed up the printing. And when we got it, you know, by the time we didn't know. You know how bad it was until we got our actual physical copies. By then, it was too late.
Yeah, absolutely. There's only one other thing that I think that maybe has kind of gone away with the times in that book. I think overall for 2005, it's a very progressive book. It's got an interesting structure of character creation and so on.
Yeah.
It does have old school random hit locations.
Oh,
tables,
yeah.
Well, which I feel that was definitely a 2005 sort of
thing.
No,
I mean, you think about it, the genesis of the game is actually is like mid 90s. And so mm-hmm. it's the system was actually kind of a offshoot of the Cyberpunk's or Our Tales Sorian's Interlock system, the stat
okay.
plus skill plus die roll versus target number, and that was sort of like the foundation of the game system. And they had hit locations. And one thing I liked about hit locations was how when a player knew that their leg was like severely injured, then in the role playing of their character's actions, they're like, man, I'm running, oh man, I'm limping on my leg, I'm like grabbing my, like, you know, blood seeping through my. I loved how, no,
I can see
how
that,
how it kind of drove the player's narration of their actions. And I think
it's a toolkit for description,
yeah, yeah.
Sure.
But you're right, it you know, we'd set up this nice, elegant system. Roll the dice. Oh, just figure out your damage and everything in just one roll. Oh, and then roll a hit location.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily the hit location by itself is an issue. What you end up running into is sort of the distance between I try to hit that guy and what are my results.
Yes.
Is an important measurement. It's a good metric.
And that's why in the new system, the way hit locations mm-hmm. are going to work, they're going to act as a specific combat effect. You're not going to roll location to hit someone. But mm-hmm. if you want to hit them in the arm and mangle their arm so they can't use it, that's a specific combat effect you'll purchase in your attack.
Can we wait? Hang on just a second. I think something important just happened. This book came out in 2005.
Yeah.
It's 2017 right now. Are you announcing a 12 years later second edition?
I am. I'm currently at work on the second edition, and it just took as long as it took.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a big exclusive we're hearing right now.
And let me just suggest, perhaps for the second edition, you call it The Legend of Zeron.
If you could just call it The Legend of Zeron. And hey, you know what's a great name is Michael?
You know, for you, anything.
So you're working on a second edition of The Secret of Zeron right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. So let's see some of the stuff that we really enjoyed about it. Please tell us it's coming back. The Go-Gotch, I think were a fantastic concept for a race.
Oh, the Go-Gotch, it's funny. I think it's listed in there. There's the 100 words challenge where the player limits themselves to 100 words. That came out of con runs where we would give that to the players who would play the Go-Gotchy characters, and they just like loved it. So we kind of kept it as a thing. And
I'm sorry, I want to make sure I got the pronunciation right. Did you say Go-Gotch?
Yeah, it's Go-Gotch. Like that's sort of like.
Oh, okay.
Like the...
Actually, let's go through these real quick because I'm curious to hear those. Because you probably listened to our own episode on your book, and we definitely turned the name for Dolinori into a bit of a lilt.
we went a little Italian.
It's it's Dolinori and the Jalanti and the
Jalanti
and the Janer. Is the humans.
Oh, I was right. That is a Y sound. The Yon-Air. Okay.
I like E.
you know what I say is like when people mispronounce the names and they wonder if they got them wrong and they say Ian and they're like, no, that's fine. That's just the Eastern Balinaean expression of that.
It's just an accent. Well, good. Hopefully there's a place in the world where everyone's talking about Dolinori.
Yeah, somewhere that's how someone's pronouncing it, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Let's see. There were a lot of things that I really enjoyed about the world. It seemed like it was very well assembled already. Like, there were a lot of moving pieces, but, and this is something that we run into fairly commonly with the reviews that we do, games that are kind of ivory tower design, you know, like Torg is a really good example of that, where you can look, but you can't really touch because everything's way too powerful for you. What's the Deadlands, I think, is another example of a game where...
You don't get to affect the metaplot.
Yeah, the metaplot's going to happen no matter what you do. But one of the things we didn't get to talk about in your book, we just ran out of time, was that it actually has a good selection of low-level monsters and monster design tips so that players actually have something to do, some way to interact with all the world that's been created.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of the kind of the metaplots, is when I set out to have these open questions that the game master would answer for the campaign, it's because the players are actually meant to be the ones who affect the metaplot. And that's the whole chosen by fate thing. And so the whole Secrets of Zeron was setting up, here are the metaplots. Think about these and think about how your players are going to intersect them and affect them and be the agents of change that will like sort of, you know, usher in the next epoch of history or whatever.
Oh, cool. Well, I like that a lot. Yeah. It's kind of like an Eberron thing, where I know that's kind of a weird thing to drag it up to a D&D's Eberron, but especially because I believe it comes out way later than your game
it
does.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, but one of the things about that game is that the highest level NPC you'll ever meet is like level 7.
Uh-huh.
And it's neat because it's supposed to keep your players being the movers and shakers of the world. You mentioned earlier that you're working on a second edition. Do you have any kind of... like release plans for it? How far along are you?
So I think I've got the basis for the core mechanics down. I'm probably about a month or two out from solidifying that. And then maybe a month or two out from there, enough to create a shell that we can then distribute just to play test the mechanics. And so I'm thinking 4 to 6 months out, we'll start being able to solicit game testers.
Well, cool. When you need game testers, don't forget to look us up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and same thing. When you get your Kickstarter or whatever your distribution model is ready to go, let us know.
Yeah.
We'll help.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to. So one of the things that we always do when we have a guest on this show is we make them stick around so that they can answer the terrible questions our listeners submit to us.
Ew. From our terrible listeners.
Public peak. Ew.
it's fun because we've specifically instructed them to send us questions that they would send to anyone and not just to us.
Uh-huh.
Predominantly because there's only so many times we can tell everyone what our favorite RPGs are.
Sure.
as it turns out. So are you?
It's The Rock.
It's The Rock. The Rock
it's
is your
always
favorite.
The Rock. The answer to what is your favorite anything is always The Rock.
He is the most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
Oh yeah, he is the people's champion.
He turns anything into gold. You give him Journey to the Mysterious Island 2, he turns it into gold.
Yeah.
So let's go to some questions if you're down to stick around.
Definitely.
Okay, let's go. I'm going to start reading off questions here. Hi guys, been listening for about a year, love your work, and only decided to write in now. Because you mentioned in the Secret of Zeron review an opinion on Final Fantasy XII I haven't heard before, but found myself agreeing with, I wanted to ask you two, what are the best and worst Final Fantasy games, and why? So, real quick here, we actually had a brief conversation between us about how we thought your game had a lot of Final Fantasy influences, and you were saying that we're thinking too recent.
Yeah, yeah. In a way, I guess Final Fantasy and me being, you know, kind of big in the early 90s when I was being inspired by this. You know, we were drawing from the same inspiration, which was, you know, Miyazaki. And you know, we're actually second generation inspired by Jules Verne, which is who actually inspired Miyazaki when he was young. And, but, you know, whatever can draw people to the game, if people are into Final Fantasy and they saw Zoran and they're like, oh, it's kind of like Final Fantasy RPG, I'm happy to entertain that, you know.
Well, heck, it's got both chocobos and the mug skill. I believe they're called Apolli, if I'm remembering correctly.
That's right.
Look at that. I can get the name of one of the monsters right, but I can't remember the title of the book.
Yeah, they're called Appalachians, and you ride them around.
All right, let's go to it. The best Final Fantasy and the worst Final Fantasy. Let's take John first.
Okay. Well, then I'm gonna have to go with 10 if I can't go 10 too.
All right.
I don't know why, but just the mechanics in that were great. I could follow the story well enough that I wasn't like, I don't know why, but 8 and 9. Both, I was just like, I have no idea what's going on here. I followed you for about an hour, and now I have no idea what I'm doing anymore.
If I may quote Titus, ha, 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 ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
Chris, what do you got?
You know, I am going to have to say my favorite is still 7, just because it had such a huge impact on me when it came out. And, I mean, you know, there are some definite, you know, inspirations from that experience that went into Zoran. And in terms of the worst, there was this one for the Super Nintendo. It was like a Final Fantasy Crystal Saga or Crystal something.
I believe it's Mystic Quest. That was
the
beginner's one.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, it sure did. It was definitely not a very good Final Fantasy game.
Well, there was, yeah. there was some know, Crystal Saga
said,
thing.
Though, but, you know, I had to disagree with you on 12. I actually really liked 12, and I thought 12 was a departure for the series, and that it got away from a lot of things I really didn't like about traditional Japanese RPGs, you know, the ranked combat left and right, and I liked the open world aspect of it. And you kind of poo-pooed the story, but for once it was a story to me that wasn't about some great cosmic thing comes down and it's gigantic and destroys everything. It was people trying to flee a war, like a little tiny country pinched between these two great powers, and how they kind of like dealt being in the crosshairs. And I thought that was like a real departure. And I loved, what was his name? The dude with the bunny chick.
Balthier.
I loved how, like, the way he would talk about it, like this is my game. You're playing my
story. Yeah, he was definitely the Han Solo of the world. You know, it's funny, if the story had been that short and sweet, I would have been 100% a huge fan of it, but it was kind of a paragraph delivery engine when it came to the writing.
The problem I had it is mostly I hated the mechanics. Like, absolutely
like
despised
gambits.
It.
Yeah.
And I just, when I'm playing an RPG like that, like, I want to control everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so being like, oh, I'm just going to be on this person, and then these other two are, I've set up an AI to make them do some stuff. I'm like, I don't want to do that, man.
It was interesting. It was certainly a new place to have people draw power from, because it was, the whole thing was like, you know, in other games, like in 7, you find materia lying all over the ground. In that game, what you find all over the place is AI control elements, where you're like, all right, now I have a 30% chance to cast Cure as a thing I can slot to some guy. It was weird, but, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. Anyway, I'm going to say my favorite, this is going to show my age for sure, is 6.
Nah.
I was a huge fan of Final Fantasy 6. I liked the huge party, and everyone still had a really good story. I know the graphics aren't exactly up to par, but I loved the storytelling elements. I mean, that game had forbidden love. It had suicide attempts in it. It had drug use, opera, all these things that I really, when I was like 13 or 14 years old and I was playing that game, were like a big deal to me. It was important. So I'm going to say that's my favorite. My least favorite, and here's the thing. By saying the core 1 through 15, we're leaving those two absolute garbage MMOs.
Yes.
In the list, because 11 and 14 are in there. I've only ever played 11, and it was the worst experience. So I'm going to say 11 is probably my least favorite.
It was one of those things where you'd start out as a character and get literally killed by bunnies.
Yeah, you'd be like, the bunny has destroyed me, and there was nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
So I'm not a huge fan. If we're going story-wise, I'd probably say, I don't know, maybe 10. 10 was way too slow for me.
Nah.
So there you go. All right. You know what's funny is I never even got through all his ground rules. He does say here to assume that we're talking about the latest and most readily available version of the game, which is funny because that makes Final Fantasy VI worse for me. The current version of FF6 is not my favorite. And his pick for the record is 5 because the story is fun, and 7 is the worst because it never got the much-needed touch-ups to make it the not most 1996 game ever. Yeah. Although that's, what, like 3 or 4 months away now?
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah. Boy, it's coming. Okay, thank you. That question was from Claritic. So thank you, Claritic. We've got our answers in. All right, we'll move on to a question from DJ Big Bird. DJ Big Bird asks, if System Mastery had an official van, what sort of sweet mural would you have on the side? I want to go with that Space 1989 logo that's in our heads, or in our hearts, but not on any kind of drawing yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, we've created that game, Space 1989, where it's Space 1889, except it's way more fun because it's not steampunk. We have this dream of a view from the inside of a cockpit out into a world where, like, 1980-style spaceships are shooting pixels at each other, and there's a controller set up, like, straight up from Centipede or Xevious or something, and there's, like, headphones hanging around from a 1980s Walkman. The whole nine yards. We want the whole thing to look like an arcade decided to take off and fly around. So that's what would be on the side of my van. What about you, John?
Side of my van, I mean, I want to go classic with a wizard. I really do.
Just some wizard?
Like, some wizard. Maybe a hot babe.
You don't want to pick, like, a wizard from one of the games or something?
No. Yeah. No. I'll have him shooting, like, lightning out, and then there can be those little, like, reality bubbles that you get, and each one of the bubbles will be one of the iconic things from our games.
Oh, like a cover? Well, they're not our games. Let's not take credit.
Well, no. But it'll be, like, the fat knife clown on there.
Yeah. That crazy four-armed mutant on a motorcycle from the cover of Second Edition's Cinnabar.
We'll get Chester Balloonman in there.
Yeah, heck yeah, we gotta get Chester Balloonman in there. Alright, what about you, Chris? What do you want on the side of your van?
I'd probably have some kind of, like, lich or some kind of cool undead guy riding a Rat Fink-style motorcycle that has flaming D20s for wheels.
Ooh, nice. I like that. That's also a good tattoo. That's kind of got that Rat Fink style. I like that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you know, if I'm going with that, I might get a drow as drawn by Coop.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's see here. Next question comes to us from Cole Wood, and that's W-O-U-L-D. I am glad to inform you that I have listened through your archive and have enjoyed every episode. As I went through, I learned that Jeff was bi, and I am excited because I had recently came out of being bi myself, and I felt like it was great for representation. Then I learned that Jeff was also loving cooking, and I really began to connect to him. When it comes to John, I'm sorry to say that I can't really gush over him as much as I do with Jeff. But with this being for Afterthought, I was wondering if Jeff could go over the mole chicken recipe that was mentioned on another Afterthought and maybe post it to the fridge, please.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It was. It was really good. I'll tell you what. I apologize. I didn't read this question beyond what it took to cut and paste it, so I don't have that memorized. I know it involved Dutch processed cocoa powder, a whole lot of spices. I can tell you, it was really good, but I didn't chop the onions fine enough, and so I ended up with kind of a chunky mole. In the future, I'll probably hit those guys into a food processor. But what I will do, Cole Wood, is I promise I will post that recipe to the fridge.
Also, if you want to identify more with me, just are you a lazy bastard? Because you did identify a lot with me. I mean...
Oh, I'm a lazy bastard, too. I'm just also bisexual. It's good for representation.
Do you have chronic depression, and are you mostly just lying in bed all day? Well, we've got a lot in common.
Hey, you got a new bed. You can feel good about that.
Yeah, I got a new bed to lie around in.
All right, so there you go. We'll put the chicken mole recipe up on the fridge for you when I remember to do so. I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, and it had like 50 goddamn ingredients, so that will come soon. Now for one that's not just people gushing over how great I am. Uh-huh. I don't know why I included that. When a snake eats a bird egg whole, how does it not get its guts all cut up by the shell? And that comes to us from Ted Cheddar. John?
I have to imagine that the inside is armored, well armored. That's how when it like swallows a mouse whole, the mouse can't just bite its way out.
What do you think, Chris?
Well, I had a pet snake once and would feed it freeze-dried mice. And one time when it had the head and the leg, it got caught in the corner of its mouth. Like, it looked like it had to spit it back out, but it didn't. That leg just kind of like eventually just bent and broke and lined up. Their esophaguses are a very powerful muscular tube. And those eggshells are not very sharp, really. And that tube can just crush those things into powder. So, yeah, there's no way there's going to... If mouse bones are not going to cut up the esophagus of a snake, eggshells aren't going to do it either.
That's true. And I've been feeding my snake X-Acto knives for years, and it has been fine. So I think that a bird egg is just not a big deal.
Yeah.
So there you go. So there's your answer. Snakes are very tough. They have armored interiors.
Yeah.
And also, anyone will tell you that bird eggs are wusses. I think we've established.
I think we could all take a bird egg in a fight.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could beat up a bird egg, provided it's not one of those cheating ostrich ones.
Now I got to make an encounter that's a giant bird egg.
When I was in high school, this is a dumb story, but this is true.
Oh my God.
When I was in high school, one of my friends showed up with an ostrich egg with the joke idea of throwing it at someone. You know, you throw an egg at a person and, you know, just hit them, get egg on them or whatever. So they lined up, they took a two-hand underhanded throw and launched an ostrich egg at another player on my water polo team, and it put a giant welt in his head, left him bleeding and dazed on the floor, and did not even crack a little bit. He might as well have thrown a 15-pound rock at him.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's just a story about ostrich eggs.
That's good. That's a good story about your idiot friends.
Water polo team is a stupid place. All right, let's see here. Hello, I found your podcast. Oh, this is another one about queer representation, so everybody get ready. I found your podcast about 3 months ago, and I have been a loyal fan since. I'm only 14 and don't have many friends. I was considering suicide when I found your podcast and was incredibly happy to find out that people exist with similar interests to me. I would in particular really like to thank Jeff. I'm bisexual and still closeted because I live in Alabama, and it's really nice to hear someone who is not like me, not afraid to be themselves. There's more than one of these this week. I didn't plan this. Okay, now I have a question. What is the best way to find an RPG group? I tried my local game store, but I constantly deal with people yelling homophobic or sexist comments at people, and it's too much for me to handle. I've tried things like Roll20, but they often ask for age, and I still have to deal with homophobic slurs, though they are less in number. How should I deal with this? Should I go to the game store and deal with it, or is there something else I can do? Thank you, Will.
Problem is, especially local game store around where you're going to be, that's going to be something you deal with. And like we always say, no game is much better than a game where you are dealing with awful people.
That's true. I mean, I understand the interest in the hobby. But it's a hard saying to say because it sounds backwards, but no gaming is better than bad gaming. Bad gaming is bad. No gaming is at least neutral.
Yeah.
So if you're in a negative environment and you're not feeling safe or you're not feeling happy, disconnect yourself from those people.
Yeah.
So let me tell you something, Will. I didn't come out till I was 22. So I'm honestly, I'm super proud of you because you're doing something I never could have done. When I was 14, I probably would have been even more reticent to come out than you are now. And not only that, but I'm bisexual in California. It couldn't be easier. It's just unfair for you to be in a place like Alabama. So I'm super proud of what you're accomplishing, and I just want you to know that where you are right now isn't where you're going to end up. You're going to find a place in the world where there's safety, where there's gaming that you can find with good people, maybe not so much in rural Alabama. But just wait it out, read, spend your time on the internet, meet people there.
I was going to say, one of the best things you could do would be, if you go find some good online sites that have either play-by-post you could do, or find some solid groups that are going to be on, like a Roll20 that you can go on with them.
This is something we can probably crowdsource. So, Will, if you do me a favor and create a Reddit profile and then go onto our subreddit, r/systemmastery, and just create a post there saying that you're young and you're looking for a place to play where you're going to not feel oppressed or harassed because of your gender orientation or your sexuality, I know our listeners, and I know that they'll show you links to places where you can play safely.
Although, let me just tell you, going on to Reddit and saying I'm young and looking for a place to play, probably not a great thing to do in normal circumstances.
Okay, don't go anywhere else on Reddit, okay, bud? All right, so like I said, what you're going through is a real pain in the ass, and I don't envy you in the slightest, but just know that it does get better. It's, you know, as you get older, you realize that the people that you know when you're young aren't the only people in the world, and you start forgetting them and losing contact with them, and it sounds terrible, but it's the best. So just get ready for the part of your life where you get to move on, find a safe place with good people, and in the meantime, just keep reading, just keep... I'd say between 14 and 17, I played like 3 games of Rifts, and I spent the rest of my time just obsessively reading RPGs. So just do that. Be ready. Don't worry too much about what's happening right now, because you've got a long life ahead of you, and it's only going to get better. All right? Okay. Hi, guys. And this is a next question coming up here. Hi, guys. Listening to the latest bonus content made me think that I would love to hear an Afterthought After Dark podcast. That means whatever you think it means. God, I don't remember. Our last bonus content was Legend of Xeran. We made Brenda Bulwark and BG Gibb.
Yeah.
What was that? A Gogok. What do we call it? Mamba Brolos?
Yeah.
You made one of those.
Yeah. John made a Mamba Brolo, and I made a Shadow Mage, which was a mistake because I hadn't read that section well enough. And so my character could do, like, nothing.
Well, actually, this is actually very important. Did you only buy one skill package, like in your character creation?
No. Okay. In fact, I went balls to the wall trying my best to kind of cheat the system. When I made my Shadow Mage, he had, you're gonna hate me for not remembering the names, but... So here we go. He was a Vandalusian Shadow Mage for his starting package.
Okay.
He was a Yawner, so he was also... So he used a second career to pick up... a black Knight of the Shade,
right?
A Shadow Mage package. Right. At which point, I decided that he had gotten too evil for his own britches, and he became a Renegade Shadow Mage.
Nice.
Then I realized that if he was old enough, he would pick up +1 to Shadow, and he was already like 36 or 37. So I picked up a level in
Prisoner,
which gave me a D10 more years, giving me a reasonable chance of getting to 39.
Yeah.
And indeed I did. So I ended up with +1 Shadow, but started with a physique of 2.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, we went balls deep.
Yeah, because that was the whole intention of the system. It's one of the parts we're really proud of is the kind of life path stuff. And in the second edition, I'm working on ways to make it just much more streamlined and kind of create paths of least resistance through mm-hmm. that system. So you can kind of just easily slot one into another. And if you want to branch out from there, you can kind of get more granular or whatever. But sort of simplifying and streamlining that character creation portion is definitely high on the priority list for the second edition.
Yeah, I know. We've been...
But yeah, like, we've... One of the things we love is when playing it with other people is actually coming up with the life stories they come up with their character. Like, yeah, I was my family was killed and I was taken prisoner, but then I escaped and I became a renegade. Yeah, I want to hear about the Mamba... tell me about your characters.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we can do that. So, John, you want to tell them about Brenda Bulwark?
Yeah, Brenda Bulwark was one of the Mamba Brolos. And then she stopped being in the actual army there, like the Defense
the Fire
Force.
Reaches, yeah.
And then took just generic police.
Mm-hmm.
So she was law enforcement. And then from there, facing a lot of the prejudice of being in law enforcement, went to being just a mercenary. Hmm. And the one thing she took with her was the armor from being in the Brolos.
Oh, yeah, the personal fortress.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So she, and of course, was ridiculously huge. Like, his physique was 2 and mine was like 11 or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yeah. It was a master blaster situation.
Yeah. And I decided that my character was someone who started out in Vandalusia, wanted to be a Shadow Mage, decided that the power path wasn't deep enough in Vandalusian culture and was trying to get more evil.
Uh-huh.
So ended up falling in with the Black Knights of the Shade, training with them for several years, realizing that he had gone far too far into selling his soul for power and tried to break away from it, became a renegade shadow mage, not to be an evil one, but to be a less evil one.
Oh yeah, the Black Knights of the Shade would be like, you broke away, and they'd be probably, you know, trying to hunt you down and stuff.
Yes, exactly. So they were trying to hunt me down. Eventually, someone catches me for either them or for shadow magery, and I get several, I think 6 years of being a prisoner, and that was the extent of my character. And it was, I was just like, all right, how do I get more points in shadow mage?
And that would set up an interesting role-playing space, because the way the game is meant to be played, the first session of the game is the day after your last skill package ended.
Okay, so like, you walk
the game
out of
would start. Yeah, the game would start would be the day after you got out of prison.
That's cool. I like that. So I'm sorry. We're this is awesome, but we're a mile off. Whatever the heck the question was. Would you do an After Dark podcast? Hang on here. Would you consider doing that as a Patreon goal? And what would your vision for that show be? Also, to the audience, if you are not springing... he's advertising for the bonus content. Folks, if you're interested in bonus content, you can subscribe to our Patreon.
And you'll hear awesome characters like we just did.
Yeah, so that's what that's all about. But anyway, so, John, what do you think? System Mastery, or sorry, Afterthought After Dark.
Afterthought After Dark. Well, I mean, I guess there'd definitely be more boner talk.
I mean, that was just what the 50 Shades of Grey review was, or darker.
Yeah.
It was just boner talk for an hour.
Yeah, just that hair trigger boner.
I've gotten a lot of messages about that. There are things you wish you didn't say on a nationally available podcast, internationally available. Okay, so yeah, we'd probably do that as an afterthought goal. That'd be our Patreon goal, a one where we go a little
sexy,
a little sexier.
Yeah,
sure. So why not?
I'll get a little husky in there.
Yeah,
I'll give you some of that late night easy listening DJ. That hey everyone. You're listening into Afterthought.
And I totally do a segment that's basically like the HBO show The Hitchhiker, where I just be like, I just tell people about how I was wandering through a town and then I totally saw two people doing it.
Yeah, and a little saxophone in the background.
A little saxophone back there. Yeah, first they started doing it on the couch.
Da, 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 da.
And then they were doing it on the stairs, you know.
Da, 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 da.
I did it in three positions. All right. Finally, and I'm sorry, I'm skipping a question in the middle here, which was, how would you stop 9/11? Yeah, you know what? Let's do it. It looks like fun. My friends and I used to play a road trip game called How Would You Stop 9/11? The rules are simple. You can go back once to any time or place where your feet touch the ground, and you can bring anything that fits in your high school backpack. The other players just point out flaws in your plan. So if time permits, how would you stop 9/11? 1895. The construction of the Sears Tower. I'd show up and be like, no, guys, don't build that. The end.
Yeah, great.
Like Sears Tower, that wouldn't stop anything.
Yeah,
that's
I was
going to
say,
Trade
awesome,
Center.
So the Sears Tower doesn't matter at all?
You're right, good point. I'm sorry. World Trade Center, built in the 1950s, I want to say? I'd just go back there and be like, guys, don't build those.
Yeah, I would just go back in time and stop the invention of airplanes. And
oh, come on, John. They just ram into the World Trade Center with trains then.
Yes, trains. That's what they would do.
Look, John, everyone knows train fuel can melt steel beams.
Look, all we'd have are Zeppelins, and then they would just kind of, like, bounce off.
You know, that actually happened to the Empire State Building once?
Yeah.
A bomber flew into it and just sort of bonked off it. What do you think, Chris? How would you stop 9/11 using nothing but what's in your backpack?
I would travel back probably in time to just about before the area of Western imperialism in the Middle East started, and in my backpack would be the complete plans on how to extract and monetize and the locations for the oil wealth in the Middle East so that they would already have all that locked down and wouldn't be able to have it sort of used as a tool against them by Europe.
That's true.
Hence bringing in the animosity that would ultimately lead to 9/11.
That makes sense. Okay, that makes good sense. That's much simpler than my idea to just get them to not build the buildings.
Yeah,
I like, okay, all right. And finally, have you guys ever played Fiasco? I think you guys would be dynamite at it.
Oh, Fiasco.
Right, well, you got one Fiasco fan. I think you guys would be amazing at it, especially John. I think we all know why. And that's from Dan Kobe. So John bought that recently.
Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Have you played it ever?
No, I have not been able to get a game of it going yet.
Well, you've never even asked me.
Well, I wouldn't.
So clearly something's wrong here.
Ugh, why would I want to play with you?
Because I
see you all the time.
Fair. So it sounds like, Chris, you played it.
I played it at a couple conventions, and a buddy of mine, Marty, who's actually one of the co-creators of Zoran, has a old one-shot he does of it. And what we like about Fiasco is it mixes well with other genres. Like, he runs sort of like a horror science fiction Fiasco, and I've played in sort of Delta Green versions of Fiasco, if you know what Delta Green, and it's just, I love, it's a perfect one shot. It's a great game to get, you know, new people who've never played games before. Mm-hmm. I love the sort of like, you only know the person sitting to the left and right of you sort of mechanic to it. And personal favorite of mine.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, there you go. So, one big fan, and John's read it. I have yet to read it. I really need to get in there and read it.
Oh, yeah. It's one of these days I'll borrow it from him. It's a super great little system to run stuff in.
I mean, as you can probably imagine, with us having to read a book once every 2 weeks to review, our model for reading new good games is...
Take it where you can get it.
Yeah, take it where you can get it. And I am just finishing my way through Savage Rifts. Which I just bought, and then also finishing up Force and Destiny, which the Star Wars FFG Jedi one. So I've got a lot of good games and a lot of bad games on my plate.
Yeah.
But I'll get to it eventually. All right, so let's see here. Questions, some of them inspired by your recent review of The Secret of Zoran. And this is from Aaron. And so, Chris, this is great for you. This is a great chance for you to straight up answer questions.
All right.
Is it ever explained what exactly The Secret of Zoran is?
I mean, there is a secret, and I don't know, like, if I gave it up.
You don't have to tell us. You just have to tell us whether or not there is one.
Yeah, there is one. Yeah, definitely. Okay.
And is it explained in there?
No, it would never. There are secrets, but the titular secret, no, just never. And it would have no impact, really, on the world or the game as a whole.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So there is one.
Yeah.
We have an answer. Great. Let's see. This one is for everybody.
It's the dream of an autistic child.
Yeah. It pulls back and it's just a snow globe.
Great. Now Munch is a part of this universe. You just connected your game to Law and Order.
I think the secret of Zoran is inside.
Hi,
is
there.
The secret.
I'm Dex Dogtective. The secret's inside. My new Cinnamon Sleuth cereal. I'm sorry, John. He doesn't even know what this is. He doesn't
know.
No one knows what's happening right now. Okay. This one looks like it's for everybody. Please enlighten your audience on acceptable use of apostrophes in fantasy role-playing.
Oh, that's for me, right?
No, this one's for everybody.
Okay.
Go ahead and take it.
Yeah.
There is none, really.
They're never acceptable, but they are definitely expected.
Yeah, just avoid them. Unless your game takes place, it's all about Celtic mythology, just avoid it.
Fair enough. Especially, like, for example, in situations where it would make sense. So, like, the only there that's acceptable in a role-playing game is T-H-E-R-E. Use that in all three situations. That will drive no one insane.
I think, for me, the apostrophe use in names for fantasy is only if you are doing joke names. If you need to, someone's stupid fantasy name up, but it's like Paras Hilton, then go ahead and use your apostrophes for that.
Okay, so for like a pair, I get you. I see what you're putting down.
Yeah, joke names.
Okay. No, I'm fine with them. I think there should be a limit of one per name, and also one piece of unusual punctuation per name is also a limit for me.
You got an exclamation point in the middle of a name?
Or hyphen. Yeah. If your name is like Baslach, like... Well, I guess that would just be like the China Miéville book, but whatever. I think they're all right. They've never bothered me immensely. John's really the one who's more bothered by fantasy words in general.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to, you know, all the fantasy nomenclature is basically just going to be part of the subtext of the game now. It's sort of like, this is a human character. And then somewhere in the text, it'll be, you know, they're known as the Yanair or the Inheritors, you know.
Yeah, that's fine.
You're a human. But I'm actually debating whether to remove the apostrophe at all, because in my head I don't go Zoran, which is how it would be pronounced with an apostrophe. I say in my head it's Zoran.
Oh, you didn't like our solution that it was actually a contraction? All right. Okay. Well, there you go. So maybe the apostrophe's going. We don't know. But I don't know. Mixed reactions on what to do with fantasy apostrophes.
Yeah.
Next question from the same guy. One of the things that Jeff glazed over towards the end of the Zoran review was that the game apparently had a really cool, somewhat unconventional martial arts system. Care to comment on that? And I'll start here. I'm going to pass over to Chris in just a second, because Lord knows I want to hear him talk about it. But it looked a lot like charm acquisition in your Exalteds or what have you. But the martial arts themselves were
really cool. I mean, there was one that was straight up Final Fantasy stealing. Like, you can steal someone's armor while in the middle of a fight
Sticky
from them.
Hands, yeah.
Yeah, that was super great. There was one that fought with scarves. They were just very well thought out and very fantasy driven, as opposed to most martial arts and role playing games where it's like, this is Kung Fu, the legend of punching. Mm-hmm. So please tell us about them. Tell us. You mentioned in the IMs that you had a co-creator help design them.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it was always, these were kind of martial arts systems that kind of just grew out of the campaigns we ran, where, you know, you'd run into a cool NPC that could do some cool martial art. And so the rule of cool was always the driving force when it came to designing the martial arts. And Aram Gutowski, who's one of the co-creators, is an actual martial arts instructor and has a deep love and appreciation of martial arts. And so it fell to him to kind of write all those out. And he kind of schooled me. I was like, sure, you know, Shrikant, the Screaming Fist, should be the most powerful martial art because it's awesomest. And he's like, there's no such thing as the most awesome martial art. He's like, they're all cool in their own way. And I was like, okay, you do it then. And he came out with all this really cool shit.
Yeah. They were really cool. I wish we'd had more time to talk about them in the core review, but here we are in an afterthought confirming that the game had great martial arts.
Yeah. I wanted a Gogaki martial art. That would have been cool.
Hey, yeah. It's not too late.
And I liked that you didn't get just, I mean, hearing that he was a martial arts instructor, you didn't just get like, oh, here are the various kinds of actual martial arts. Like, you got some weird fantasy stuff in there and some like over the top level stuff you could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. It was only like a couple of quick pages towards the end of the book, but it felt like a fully self-contained and very functional system.
Yeah. It worked well too. Like, it just created some interesting characters and in play it was a lot of fun.
Okay, so this next one's going to be a little harsh, so you got to be ready for this.
Okay.
Randomly injecting the stock Tolkien races into Xeron felt like one of the game's bigger mistakes. In contrast, what games do you like that handle unconventional player races well? And then he says, bonus hard mode, no vanishing point. He knows us. So,
all right, you know, we did the stock races and added a couple of our own because, like I said, the intent was, let's take a stock fantasy world and dial its development forward. And and also put, try to put a creative spin on dwarves and elves and beast people and ogre people, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's also accessibility. One of my favorite games that had non-human races was this D20 game called Oathbound. And it had really bizarre races that I thought were cool, but none of my friends, like, wow, a crystalline bird guy with life for wings? Ah, that's kind of weird. So I couldn't get anyone sort of, like, into it. And so I would say Oathbound, but actually, from the advanced, the advanced race guide for Pathfinder has some really cool non-human stuff in it.
Yeah, I think so too. I feel like this guy probably missed a shot here by blocking us from using Vanishing Point, but not blocking us from using space games.
Yeah, because Star Frontiers exists.
Yeah. Oh, sure, right.
And the Vrusk are amazing.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, here's the thing. Most games, like almost 100% of fantasy and I'd say 80% of non-fantasy role-playing games, put dwarves and elves in there.
Yeah.
It's not something you can single out any one person for. Heck, one of my favorite worlds to play a role-playing game in is in Shadowrun, and that's straight up, what if dwarves and elves were cyberpunk?
Yeah.
So
the dwarves and elves thing, even when you're doing like, oh, this is a game and it's aliens. These are tall aliens with pointy ears, and you're like, oh, I get it. Okay,
come on, Star Trek, get your shit together.
I will tell you a little secret about the Zorani elves, though.
Like, go for it.
That was part of our campaign. There were only about 12 of them left, and wow. they were sort of post humans living in this kingdom, and it was sort of like how you said, an invading army did try to invade Felicia once, and then woke up on, you know, outside it with, you know, the Jolanti saying, don't try that. Don't do that. and so they're so sort of disconnected and they're kind of locked into their programming that the gods kind of put them in. And so they send out these mental projections of themselves to sort of kind of learn from the Nair about what is change and, you know, how to kind of exist in a world of constant change. So they're just kind of like in this, and they don't actually have many memories. Their brains are sort of semi-wiped when they kind of project outwards.
Okay, so they're kind of sending out astral projections, and that's why they don't know everything, and you couldn't press them for information, is because the projection they send out doesn't know everything.
Yeah, so they're sending out an SOS to the world.
and because they are sort of like creatures of thought back in their home, they're sort of afraid of infectious ideas, like backtracking through that connection and infecting them or changing them in some way. So that's the deal with them. And the Gogaki, how you were saying that, why, if they're such great engineers, why haven't they developed their economy and stuff? Mm-hmm. We actually had a campaign where the players were trying to figure that out.
Oh, there's an answer to that.
Yeah, and they went out to the Fire Reaches and they were like, interacting with the Gogaki and kind of like, and noticing the incredible like chemical and mineral wealth that was on their islands that's like untapped. And sort of the Volkan, the leader of the Gogaki, is sort of basically very paternalistic and trying to protect them and keep them in this sort of primitive state, in order to, in his misguided mind, to keep them safe. But the thing about the Fae is they're all insane. They're all that's their sort of unifying characteristic.
Good. Okay, so there we go. And I guess I'll give my own answer here for what game I like that has the weirdest races in it. I'm gonna actually, what's funny is I love the 4th edition third player's handbook, which had the crystal people in it that I thought were so fantastic. So, and the Minotaur, when they were rebuilt to be like, oh, mazes are just a part of our culture. We just like mazes.
We just like them.
I always thought that was pretty cool. Hmm. So I'll probably throw those in there as my choice. All right, so last question from Aaron. This is probably the hardest one. Here we go. Everyone get ready. Would you rather be able to fly by farting or teleport by burping?
Do I have to be farting the entire time that I'm flying, or do I fart once and then just fly?
Well, I mean, if you want to fall, go ahead and stop farting. Sure.
Okay. Well, then it's obviously teleport by burping, because you burp once and you've teleported.
I suppose so. So you're just taking your laziness into account.
Exactly. I just don't want to have to be farting the whole time. I mean,
you're going to
land somewhere and be like, all right, I need a change of pants.
So what you're looking for in this answer is a change from your regular life then, farting all the time.
Like, can you afterburner this if you shart? Is that like going supersonic or?
Hang on. We're doing a would you rather, which means I actually have the questions and answers. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. So I don't know. You probably listened to a few of these, Chris, but the rules are... I'm asking the question, which means I won't have an answer. I'm just going to provide you guys with follow-up answers to any questions you have before you make a decision.
Okay.
So John's asking if he has to fart the entire time when he's flying, and I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
So fire away. Any other questions you have before you make your decision?
No.
No, you're good to go?
Yeah.
Okay, now, John, what do you got?
Now, like I said, can I afterburner for sharting?
I'm going to say no, it slows you down.
Okay.
It slows you down because it's blocking the aperture.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my teleportation,
mm-hmm.
Does it have to be, can I just, produce one of those, I put air in my throat and burp, or does it have to be like I had soda and I have to burp now burps?
It's going to have to be the second one. You can't, because anyone can burp on command. It's not complicated. Yeah. So I'm going to say it's the second one. You have to organically burp.
Okay.
And at that point, you teleport whether or not you meant to.
Okay. Now, does it have to be like... line of sight, visualized places I've been, or can I just teleport perfectly?
You automatically teleport to whatever's in your field of focus whenever you burp.
Okay. Do I have the chance of doing that? I teleport into a wall.
No, because it's not, the inside of the wall is not in your field of focus.
Awesome.
So what do we got?
Okay. I guess I'm going to go with the burping, if only because I'm not sure I could sustain a fart for long enough to fly anywhere.
All right. Well, there you go. He's going to go with teleport by burping. Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, I'd have to go teleport by burping. I mean, farting, that's just kind of gross. And would I have to use a fart to break my fall? Like, and could I guarantee that I'd be able to have the kind of like two-phasic fart sort of
Yeah, you need a launch and a landing.
You got a squeaker just to soften your landing.
Yeah, and I was really bad at that Lunar Lander game. Remember that old one?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Two answers for teleport by burping, which honestly sounds like the right choice to me, and I'm going to say it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. Let's see. What are we doing on time? We got time for, I'm going to say one more. Let's just dig around and see what's a good one here.
Let's find a real juicy one. Let's dig into that bag and see what grabs us.
Yeah, I've got about four left. I'm going to go with... This is an easy question from someone named Andalana, and I'm taking it because it's a new person. Dear Jeff and John, you guys make a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 references and jokes that make my cold, shriveled heart happy. Did one or both of you back last year's Bring Back MST3K Kickstarter? Are you looking forward to the new series coming out next month? And most importantly, what are each of your favorite episodes from the first 10 seasons and why? And let me just go through his signature here. Signed, a fan from Cambridge, England. By the way, we do now play games that aren't based on fantasy wargaming, the highest level of all. One of the local bookstores, Heffer's on Trinity Street, if you care to give them a plug, runs a massive monthly game night with board games and RPG one-shots all around the store after it closes. Lots of fun. And Alana.
Aw, oh, look at those. Those British savages can be taught.
They're finally all the way up above fantasy wargaming, the highest level of all. No doubt they've learned to play bunnies and burrows.
No doubt.
Okay, so let's go to it. Best and worst episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
You know what's interesting? I was just watching that literally last night.
Mm-hmm.
Because they put up
like 20 new episodes or old episodes on Netflix.
The 20 best episodes they put up.
And all of my favorites are in those 20 best episodes that they put up. So they were not wrong.
I was watching Werewolf. I would say probably, I mean, obviously the best one for me, Pod People.
So your standard answer is going to be Pod People.
Pod People is so good. It's just the best of them.
It just really hits all the good joke marks, and the movie itself is entertainingly weird.
Yeah, because there are ones that I'm like, even when they're doing good, like Red Zone Cuba is so boring that even when they're doing MST3K stuff over it, I'm still just like, oh, I don't care.
Yeah, I have that problem with any of the ones that are like 60s romances or... the Starfighters. Which is just like about jet pilots and they're hanging out in a bar. It doesn't matter how funny the bots are. That movie is toxically boring.
Yeah.
What do you, Chris, are you a watcher of Mystery Science Theater?
Oh, yeah. And actually, what you said about 60s romantic comedies, I'd say my least favorite one would be like Catalina Caper. Because there's just like, the movie itself is just kind of stupid teenage romance stuff. And there's not enough to riff on. But my favorite, though, is probably Godzilla vs. Megalon, just for the Jet Jaguar song alone. Jet Jaguar, Jet Jaguar.
That's a good one. It's a hard one to find because of licensing issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I love that song, but I've always kind of been more partial to Gamera is really neat. He is full of turtle meat.
Yeah, that one is hilarious.
Yeah. My favorite episode of all time, I'm going to say is, I'm going to go, well, John already said Werewolf, which is my usual answer for favorite.
Yeah, because I was watching that last night.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I'm going to go ahead and plug Space Mutiny.
Yeah, which is the other one.
Yeah, Space Mutiny is definitely one of the funniest episodes they ever did. least favorite for me is going to be Side Hackers.
I remember that one. Yeah,
yeah, I just can't bring myself to care. So there you go. That seems to be the big winner and loser of Mystery Science Theater movies. Is if the movie is so like just unflaggingly boring that even the bots can't fix it.
Oh yeah, I mean. Forget what it was. It was like something the Batwoman one.
Oh, it's Wild World of Batwomen.
Wild World of Batwomen.
Yeah.
It was just so boring that my favorite joke in there is at one point someone like swings across something on a rope and Crow just goes, God, I wish I was swinging from that rope.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you got it.
There's also one where I can't remember which one it is, but there's one that's so boring and repetitive that Servo screams and tries to escape. I wish I'd remember which one that is, because it's amazing. Wait. It was Monos, The Hands of Fate. All right, so let's see. There were a few other questions there. Did either of us support the Kickstarter to bring them back? I didn't.
No.
I wish I had. I'm still a little of mixed opinion about the return. I'm really excited for all the talent that's involved. Elliot Kalin's the head writer. He's from the Flophouse podcast, and of course, he's the head writer for The Daily Show for many years. He's one of my favorite TV writers, so I'm super excited that he's coming back. On the other hand, Jonah Ray is like one of my least favorite comedians, so him replacing Mike and Joel is worrisome. So I'm kind of mixed feelings.
Yeah, I'm always gonna love Patton.
Patton Oswalt's in there too, isn't he? He's the new Frank.
Yeah, he's TV's Frank now.
He's TV's son of TV's Frank.
Yeah.
So that's something that's just there's so many good things that I think I may be able to overcome my distaste for anyone connected to the Enjoy Your Burrito Nerdist Network.
I'm kind of committed to supporting anything Patton Oswalt does now.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the guy's just untouchably funny. So and TV's Frank is a perfect legacy for him to pick up and carry.
Yes.
He even came out and said, I shouldn't be doing this. Frank Conniff is still alive. Which is just, that's a nice little bit of respect to show. So I am definitely looking forward to it. And God, that's coming up real soon, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like this
month.
That's
why they put those 20 episodes on Netflix, was to be hype up for the new MST3K.
So there you go.
Pump, as it were.
So let's see. Once again, looks like that's all the time we have for questions today. I definitely want to thank our guest, Chris Hawkabout. Thank you so much for coming and speaking with us about your game, The Secret of Zeron.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. I was a fan before I listened, and you guys are cool, and thanks a lot.
Hey, it's our pleasure. Let me just take this quick opportunity here to say that if any author of any of these books that we're ripping into ever wants to come on our show and yell at us about it, we are always open to that.
We love the abuse.
Yeah.
We are into it.
We deserve it. We've been mean to 90 games.
We've been bad, bad boys, and yeah. We deserve it.
God, why? Save it for Afterthought After Dark, buddy. All right, so once again, thanks to Chris Hawkabout. You can find his game out there in the world, and a new copy is coming soon, and when it does, you'll be hearing about it here on System Mastery. Otherwise, you can find us at systemmastery@gmail.com or System Mastery on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit. We're all over the place. If you have anything you want to say to us, any games you'd like to recommend, any questions you'd like to ask, you can do it at any of those channels. We're open and we're easy to get a hold of.
And Chris, is there anything else you wanted to plug while you're on?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, there you go. No plugs from Chris. Hello, folks. Quick editor's note here. Chris actually did have a plug he wanted to put into the show. He emailed it to us after the fact, and I'm going to go ahead and read it to you now. Chris says, I'd like to plug The Game Academy, a nonprofit who use role-playing games as an educational tool for tweens and teens. You can learn more at thegameacademy.org. And for prospective and current Zeron players, they might want to check out my friend Andrew Mayer's Society of Steam trilogy, available at andrewpmayer.com. Once again, that's the Society of Steam trilogy, available at andrewpmayer.com and thegameacademy.org. Thanks again, Chris. So, otherwise, support our Patreon, buy our t-shirts, generally... Oh, you know the one...
Give us money. Just mail us money.
Just put money in a bag and throw it to where you think we are.
Oh, actually, yeah, one thing. Watch The Expanse. I don't want that show to get canceled.
All right. Watch The Expanse on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Because everything I love gets canceled.
That's true. Everything everyone loves gets canceled.
And
it's the worst.
Just so you know, we are being canceled right now. So
here we go. Last show, everybody. What was I going to say? The other thing that you can do for us as listeners that I always forget to mention is give us reviews on iTunes, because those spread us to other listeners. So just putting
Plus
that out
like
there.
I like reading them.
I do. I especially like reading the one-star ones because the reasons are always hilarious. Honestly, I feel like we should start doing a segment where we read one-star reviews and then immediately end it, because otherwise people will just do one-star reviews to get us to read their shit on the air.
Yes.
So anyway, thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful week.